You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll look at the revelations coming out of last night's public hearing by the House Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. Now, it's this week's edition of Food Friday. We are having trouble connecting with our guests, so I think we're going to reschedule with them a conversation I'm looking forward to, actually, about baking. So what are we going to do? We're going to turn to you. Call in now with your cooking advice and where it came from. Was it from the School of Hard Knocks, something you did wrong and figured out how to do better next time, a cookbook, a relative? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Want to hear your advice if there's a new cook out there who is going to be setting up their own kitchen. What would you tell them? What kind of things would you suggest they buy to stock up their kitchen? What is your advice for a new first-time cook or baker? What have you learned, again, from cookbooks, from the internet, from the hard teacher of experience in cooking? You can join in now at 800-642-1234 with your cooking advice to the world. That's 800-642-1234. It's a surprise special edition of Food Friday in which you are our guest and you are our expert. Again, 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. One of the biggest things I discovered probably later in life that I wished I had was the beauty of roasting vegetables in the oven. It made me like I already liked veggies okay, but made me like them a lot more. And this is just, you cut it up, you toss it in some probably olive oil, a little salt and pepper, whatever spices you like, and then you bake it in the oven. You can bake it at 350 for a long time. You can bake it at 450 for a shorter time. It comes out different, but it always comes out really good. As long as you pull it out before it gets burnt, of course. And I'm talking carrots, sweet potatoes, eggplant, zucchini, beets, if you like beets, which I do, but nobody else in my family does. That's probably your best bet, by the way, if you want to get other people to like a particular vegetable. Broccoli, asparagus, I'll do that way. So squash, yeah, the list goes on and on. Well, that's my bit of advice to start us off. Now you, 800-642-1234 on a special listener edition of Food Friday. We'll go to your calls now. Jane is with us in Sheboygan. Hi there, Jane.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to relay what I've learned when I started learning how to cook, and I did not know how to cook when I became a mom and a wife, and I got the Food Network, and I watched Rachel Ray 30-Minute Meals, and believe me, I learned how to cook from her. I learned everything.
Awesome.
And it's simpler than I thought. It's just olive oil, garlic, onion, maybe some pepper. You almost add that to everything. Almost everything you cook starts with garlic, with olive oil, garlic, and onion. You can make...
I'm not as hardcore on this, Jay, but there was a long time where it was like literally everything I made, I started cooking exactly like what you just said. I start with sauteed garlic and onions. So what are some of your favorite things that you make with this starting point?
I love to make just fried vegetable mix. I will put garlic, onion, pepper, broccoli, mushrooms. You can throw potatoes in there, and you can just add it to any meat. And I've also done it in the oven where you just put, raw onions, a little bit of garlic, a little bit of broccoli, cauliflower, whatever you have on hand, throw it on a sheet pan at 400 and you're done. It roasts up perfectly every time.
You and I are cooking twins, Jane.
Yes.
Awesome. Thank you so much for getting us started at 800-642-1234. Looking for your advice for a new cook, your favorite bit of advice that's ever helped make you a better cook. Hey, maybe you heard it here on Food Friday. I don't know, maybe. 800-642-1234 is the number to call, or email ideas@wpr.org. Nate joins us now in Cleveland. Hi, Nate.
Hi.
What's your advice, Nate?
So some advice. I work in a commercial kitchen and I cook at home. And you got to get a good set of knives. find some sharp knives, keep them sharp. I mean, you think the sharper the knife, I'm going to hurt myself, but any cook out there listening to me right now, I'll tell you that dull knives are the easiest way to hurt yourself when you're cooking.
It's very true, Nate. And I got to say, we let our knives get dull for a long time. And then one of my kids took culinary in high school and used the knives at school, and they came home and used our knives, and she shamed us. She shamed us into getting them sharpened because they were terrible compared to what she was using at school.
100%. I mean, I'm guilty of it too. I let my knives get dull at home sometimes too, but then I got to get them sharpened up. It saves you, makes getting your cutting done way quicker, saves you tons of work, saves you tons of nicked fingers.
Nate, I got to ask you a side question here. When I was in college, I ended up having a roommate, one of my buddies from high school, and he worked at the fanciest restaurant in Belleville, Michigan. It was not very fancy, but he's a cook. And I thought, this is awesome. I'm going to live with a cook. He's going to make awesome stuff all the time. And in fact, he would eat oatmeal and only oatmeal at home because he was sick of cooking. Did you get that ever?
Yeah, I do get that. So luckily for me, when I cook at my girlfriend's place, my girlfriend owns on the weekends. So I don't cook probably as much as your buddy in college did. But
all right, Nate,
I get kind of cooked out at work.
Excellent, Nate. Thank you so much for good sharp knives. But actually, one pointer: if you sharpen the knives in your house, let your husband know. Because the most dangerous thing is thinking a knife is going to be dull and then finding out it's sharp. Nate, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. It's Food Friday, a U edition of Food Friday. We want your advice for cooks at any level, really. 800-642-1234. Dirk joins us next in Summers. Dirk, hello.
Such a great listener-affirming topic today. I love it.
Well, you guys are so smart, all y'all. So what do you got to share with us, Dirk?
Two things. One, making bread is incredibly confidence-inspiring. It's so few ingredients. You're going to see the magic of yeast eating things and rising and yummy smells coming out of your kitchen. Got to do it. So easy. The other thing is the cooking to taste and not being confined and freaked out by measurements. So what I ask people to do is make a simple tomato sauce, maybe saute some onions and some garlic, put some crushed tomatoes in there, and then put a little bit in a bowl. Add some salt first and get to the point where there's too much salt. Do the same thing with sugar.
Uh-huh.
Maybe a honey instead of sugar. Do the same thing and do a little teeter-totter effect between the sugar and maybe balsamic vinegar.
Yeah.
So put an acid in there. That really ramped up my whole cooking experience.
All right, Dirk, I'm with you on part two there, cooking to taste. But part one, I'm a little scared to make bread because it seems like you got to get it exactly right. And I have flashbacks to all my failed lab experiments in high school chemistry, right? Don't you have to be more precise with the bread baking?
I have really never had it go wrong. I really haven't. I know that it's possible. I have a friend of mine who made tortillas that turned out looking like cornbread. To this day, we don't know how she actually achieved that accomplishment, but rather than a failure, I would prefer to see it as some kind of strange achievement she accomplished.
Wonderful. Dirk, but, I love it. Thank
you. Go for it. Do it. Build your confidence. Have some bread. Enjoy.
I got to try it sometime. Thank you, Dirk, for that encouragement at 800-642-1234. Paula joins us now in Rhinelander. Paula, hi.
Hi. Hey, I'd like to reflect what earlier caller said about knives, but also tools in general. Really good tools. Just buy a few and build from there. A microplane is incredible for adding cheese to the top of things. And I do roast a lot of vegetables, use the leftovers to make a brothy soup or a broth soup. And then at the end, just put a little bit, just a little bit of cream in to make a cream soup. You don't need a lot of cream. And also get some really good cookbooks that you love. I have one in particular that I just love. I got as a gift. It's the unofficial Harry Potter cookbook, and I have lots of cookbooks, but this is fantastic. And I've been cooking my way through it, made a lot of recipes, and it is just fun. Just fun. Thank you.
Fantastic, Paula. Thank you for calling in. I'll throw some advice in on top of Paula's there for getting a creamy soup with a lot of cream. Roasted cauliflower in the soup, and at the end, you hit it with an immersion blender, one of my favorite tools for soup making. It ends up being like a cream soup, even if you didn't put any dairy in it at all. But then a lot of times I'll still put dairy in it, because come on. You can join in. It's Food Friday. We're taking your advice for other cooks, something you learned, something that maybe changed your cooking or baking game. Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll take more of your calls coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. It's Food Friday, a special you-centric edition of Food Friday, looking for your advice for other cooks. Maybe something you learned the easy way or the hard way along the way. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your advice, or you could email ideas@WPR.org. Back to your calls. Philothea is with us in Viroqua. Philothea, hi.
Hi. Hi, Rob.
Hi, what's your advice?
Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Well, my advice is, if you're not in a hurry and you want to equip your kitchen, buy used things. I have gotten all my blenders, food processors, knives, cast iron pans, everything from Goodwill used shops for way lower the price.
And do you get pretty good quality stuff? Do things work pretty well when you buy them used?
Oh, really? I just bought a stainless steel pot with a lid on it at a resale shop, and it was much better quality than stuff that you're getting at the box stores. And some of the cast iron skillets are really well seasoned already.
Excellent. Philothea, thank you so much. That's great advice at 800-642-1234. That reminds me, years ago, it was a long time ago, back when I was into canning, I don't so much do it anymore, I got a Victory model pressure canner, I think like World War II vintage, like to can your Victory garden. And it was a fine pressure cooker, and I got it on the cheap at an antique store. So great advice, Philothea. How about you, 800-642-1234? Kelly joins us now in Jefferson. Kelly, hi.
Hi, I am calling because despite the fact that I live in Wisconsin, I love dairy, but dairy doesn't necessarily love me. Mm-hmm. And same with gluten. So I am gluten-free, dairy-free, and I love to bake. And I was getting just really frustrated with what to do. And my advice for new people to gluten-free baking is to get a measure-by-measure flour. My favorite is the King Arthur brand, but that kind of is a baby step into gluten-free baking. And I think it's a lot less frustrating than trying to come up with your own gluten-free flour blend.
Now, what does measure-by-measure flour mean?
It basically means that you can buy a product. The one that I like, again, is by King Arthur, but it's where you have a recipe, and if it calls for 2 cups of all-purpose flour, you just use a measure-for-measure gluten-free alternative, and
oh, okay.
You just put in 2 cups of that, and it just makes it really easy to transform your favorite recipes into a gluten-free recipe.
So what's your favorite thing to make with this gluten-free measure-for-measure flour?
I have figured out how to make the Toll House cookie recipe with gluten-free, and it actually is really good, and that's been my favorite thing so far. You have to add a little bit more baking powder because sometimes the leavening agents are off a little bit, but it's a fun one to work with.
Thank you for sharing that, Kelly. We've got a testimonial here, too, from one of our gluten-free staff members, the King Arthur gluten-free, Trina, yeah? All right. Thank you for sharing that. It's Food Friday. We are taking your advice. You are the guest expert today, looking for your advice for cooks, maybe a brand new cook or baker at home. What is something that you have learned over the years that really changed your cooking? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org with your advice for other cooks. Share something you've learned. Maybe tell us who or what you learned it from. Back to your calls now. Del is with us in Fond du Lac. Del, hi.
Hi.
Oh, what's your advice, Del?
My suggestion is when you're making a roast, a good seasoning for it is a package of onion soup mix. Just the dry onion soup mix, you know, that you get?
Mm-hmm, sure.
I find that does quite well. And then I put my vegetables in. Sometimes if I don't have the vegetables or I don't feel like cooking them, I'll get a package of frozen vegetables, dump them in, or put them in. And then if I don't have quite enough seasoning or I want a little more juice, gravy, whatever, I get out my jar of Better Than Bouillon. Those are my go-tos.
I really try not to recommend particular brand names on Food Fridays, but Better Than Bouillon, man, that changed my cooking game. I will admit that. I won't argue with that at all, Del. That really helps my soups a lot in particular.
Just gives them a little bit of flavor without a lot of salt.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, I agree. And now, when you're making your roast, are you doing this in a crock pot or are you in the oven here in a roasting pan?
The last one I made in the crock pot. First, I browned it on the stove in a black iron frying pan, of course, and then I put it in the crock pot and put a bunch of vegetables in. I put some onions and potatoes under it for a while,
sure.
And then later on, after about 8 hours, I put some more vegetables on top.
Oh, that sounds great, Del. You're making me hungry. Thank you so much for sharing that at 800-642-1234. It is Food Friday. We are asking for you to be our expert right now. Share cooking advice, a lesson you've learned, something that helped you make something a lot better, or some, you know, basic advice, techniques, gear, something that changed your life after you bought it and you had it in your kitchen. Still time for your calls right now. But only right now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org with your cooking advice, 800-642-1234. That number again, where do I start? I've learned so much from Food Friday. It's made me so much of a better cook. Spices. You've probably heard me. If you listen to Food Friday a lot, you've heard me talk about this. I talked to the author of a book about spices, and he says, hey, if you got an old coffee grinder, use it, get whole seed spices. And I tried it. It is really something, like cumin seed, a coriander seed, peppercorns. Like, that is so much of a go-to in my cooking now. It adds so much flavor. Back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Sheila is with us in Dubuque. Sheila, hi.
I enjoy your show.
Thanks.
Anyway, my tip is browned butter. I have really liked that in my cookie recipe. And if you're doing a graham cracker crust for a pie, if you brown that butter, oh my goodness, that sets it apart.
Now, how do we brown? I've heard about this. I've done it. I'm not very patient, though. I just want to get the butter in there and eat the cookies as soon as I can. How do I brown the butter?
I use like a stick of butter, and I put that in just like a little saute pan. And I don't get it too hot, but it develops kind of a little bit of a caramelish brown color to it. What you're doing is you're evaporating any of the water out of that butter, and it really develops a nice, like a caramely kind of a flavor.
Great. So you said cookies. What else do you like to use the brown butter in?
If you're making a graham cracker pie crust.
Yeah.
So for lots of different pies, especially for the summer, if you do the browned butter instead of just regular melted butter, there's such a difference in the crust. It tastes so wonderful.
Sheila, thank you.
You just have to try it.
I think I will. I made a graham cracker crust not that long ago for pumpkin pie with my famous Long Island cheese pumpkin that I was trying to use up. The crust came out really good, except one time I used the wrong kind of like evaporated milk instead of condensed milk or vice versa. The pie filling came out kind of weird, but the crust was pretty good. Oh, hey, our phone lines are not working now. So many people wanted to get an advice. And I cannot talk to you. I'm sorry about that. Thanks to everybody who's called in. There is still time, though, to share your advice, your cooking advice, lessons you've learned over the years. You could email us, ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. And over the course of next week, why I can share some of that advice with other listeners and they can make use of it at home. Another one, getting back to flavors, I used to, you know, if I use cilantro, like fresh cilantro, which is you can buy usually pretty cheap at stores, fresh basil, which sometimes you can find cheap, usually it's really expensive. But I used to like take a little bit and sprinkle it on at the beginning of cooking something. And I learned a few things about that. One, the end. Put those things in at the end because otherwise you're going to cook all the flavor out of them. B, use lots of it. Like use it like a vegetable. Oh, hey. So do that thing I said. Time for one more quick caller. Our lines came back. Diane is with us in Menominee. Hi, Diane.
Good afternoon. I have a simple recipe for peanut butter cookies for people that are gluten and dairy free.
Ooh.
1 cup of peanut butter, 1 egg, and 1 cup of sugar. And you just bake them like you would a normal peanut butter cookie, and you get about a dozen for that recipe.
Oh, that sounds...
depending on how long you make them.
That sounds delicious, Diane. Thanks so much. And I counted exactly no gluten in that recipe, so that's fantastic. Thank you so much, everybody who called in and shared your cooking advice. Again, you can keep on sharing it. Email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Coming up Monday morning here on the Ideas Network, members of Congress will continue to hold hearings in the investigation into the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. That kicked off last night. We'll be talking about that in just a few here on Central Time. Tune in starting at 9 a.m. on Monday. Again, NPR will be hosting coverage of the House committee when they reopen, when they reconvene on Monday to share more evidence. That's Monday morning at 9 here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. The House committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol held its first public hearing last night, broadcast in primetime on most national television. It featured new footage of the mob storming the Capitol building and testimony from lawmakers and witnesses. Capitol Police Officer Carolyn Edwards, who suffered a brain injury in the attack, shared graphic details of what she saw that day.
What I saw was just a war scene. It was something like I'd seen out of the movies. I couldn't believe my eyes. There were officers on the ground. They were bleeding. They were throwing up. They were, you know, they had, I saw friends with blood all over their faces. I was slipping in people's blood.
The hearings will continue next week, but the first night unveiled new allegations about former President Trump and his role on January 6th and the lead up to it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you watch or listen to last night's public hearing? What did you think? What were your takeaways? What do you want to hear as the committee continues to investigate? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. David Schultz is a professor of political science at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota. David, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me again.
We had this hearing kind of recalling, in some ways, the enormity of what we saw. A president of the United States loses an election, devotes weeks to try to overturn that loss, culminating in what we saw on January 6th. Did last night's broadcast, last night's hearing, bring that back into the spotlight?
I think it brought it back into spotlight. But of course, remember, we're looking at a lot of things competing with a very crowded political agenda right now. We obviously have the 2022 elections. We have inflation. We have a war. We have a lot of more de facto war going on in Ukraine, a lot of things. And so I think what Congress wanted to do was to bring it back and remind the American public again that something happened on January 6th, 2021, and it's serious enough that we need to reconsider it. Whether that really brings the focus back to the Americans to think about this is yet to be seen. But on that first night, on Thursday night, in 2 hours, an incredible amount of information was packaged together. And what it struck me as, it looked like the opening statement in a prosecution for a criminal case, where they're going to lay out their theory, lay out their evidence, and then over the course of what the next several hearings that they're going to be televising, to actually lay out the entire case. But last night was a remarkable presentation in terms of putting together audio, visual, in-person testimony. It was compelling, I would say, news in some ways.
Depending on who talks about the events of January 6th, that was a dust up, a protest, maybe it got a little out of hand, or it was a verging on overturning our system of peaceful transition of power in the United States. What do you, when you look back, what do you see at stake in January of last year?
Well, it really was in many ways all about, I think, domestically, the integrity of our elections. This would have been, with the exception maybe of the Civil War, where the South objected to Lincoln's winning and seceded from the Union, this would have been the first time in American history where a loser basically didn't concede the election and instead sought to try to overturn the results of an election. We've had other close elections in American history. Nixon, Kennedy, 1960. Obviously, Clinton and Trump's 2016, Gore and Bush in near 2000. And in all those cases, the loser at the end of the day conceded the loss and moved on. So on one level, most Americans are thinking about this is about the integrity of our elections, about our democracy. But we shouldn't also forget that the rest of the world is watching, and that what happened on January 6th really damaged U.S. representation as a democracy across the world, because suddenly, to use a line that's been used by many people, we didn't quite look like that shining city on the hill. We looked kind of dirty and grubby, and that our democracy was not all that we hoped it would be.
Talking to David Schultz from Hamline University and the University of Minnesota, looking at the first in a series of public hearings from the January 6th committee in the U.S. House of Representatives. You can join in with your thoughts, your reactions, your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Dennis is with us in Two Rivers. Dennis, hi.
Hi, Rob. What some Trump reporters are saying is that what happened on January 6th was just normal political discourse and just some visitor, or is it just some tourist? No, it was violent, and it just kind of fits in with what Trump said a while ago, is he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and not be charged. So it's just whatever Trump does seems to be okay with the Trump supporters. Okay, I'll hang up and listen.
Dennis, thanks a lot for that call. We heard that excerpt from Police Officer Carolyn Edwards' presentation, testimony at the outset. Did this make the case that this was not, in fact, a tourist jaunt through the Capitol?
I think it did last night. I think it actually should have made that case back when it happened in January 6th, when you have people, you know, forcibly storming the Capitol, breaking down barriers, breaking windows, taking control of offices. I'm trying to think of now, and maybe you might recall, how many deaths resulted as a result of what happened on January 6th. But clearly the testimony last night pointed out that even beyond deaths, how many people were hurt. This is not your picket in front of City Hall protesting a tax increase. This was violent. And part of what I think what the committee is going to try to do is to argue that both by his acts and by his omissions, Donald Trump is responsible for what happened. By his acts, the words and deeds that he used, perhaps, and we don't know yet, perhaps by maybe other things that he did, but also they're trying to argue by his omission, by his failure to call to bring out extra security, the failure to perhaps tell his supporters retreat. So they're trying to make a case that eventually brings it up to the president of the United States that what? This was violent. And I think the graphics last night on Thursday, the pictures, the testimony, were meant to try to convince the American people, guess what? People were hurt. People bled. People died as a result of this. This is not a peaceful First Amendment protected activity.
Republican Representative Liz Cheney of Wyoming shared testimony from a witness who described President Trump's reactions during the January 6th attacks. Here's a listen.
Aware of the rioters' chance to hang Mike Pence, the president responded with this sentiment, quote, maybe our supporters have the right idea. Mike Pence, quote, deserves it.
That speaks to what you were just talking about, questions of President Trump's role, what he said, what he didn't say or do. Can you talk some more about that?
Sure. I think what Representative Cheney is trying to do is to say, look at how the president of the United States literally egged on and encouraged his supporters to undertake an action that by most accounts had it happen. I'm going to say that by most accounts, but all accounts had that happen, that would have been murder. It would have been maybe political assassination. And what she's trying to set up in her argument, and I think what the committee is to say, is that we can tie all this back to the president of the United States. And she made a reference also about his constitutional duties. And I'm going to make an argument here, is that to say that an ordinary citizen probably doesn't have maybe has a right to say, let's change the government. Let's create a new government. That's, after all, what our Revolutionary War people did. Most people would not say that an average person has a right to advocate killing a government official. What she was trying to hint at here is to say that the president, in taking that actions, violated his constitutional duties. Now, she didn't phrase it here, but one of the duties that the president of the United States has in Article 2 of the Constitution, it says that the president shall take care that the laws shall be faithfully executed. And if you look at what happened there, I think what she's saying is he did nothing to take care that the laws shall be faithfully executed. In fact, he took actions to encourage the disobedience of the law. And that's what she was referencing, I think, when she said he violated his constitutional duties.
So we're on another caller now at 800-642-1234. Bill is with us in Superior. Bill, hi.
Yeah, hi. Hey, I guess I'm just looking at the ratings report from yesterday. A lot of people don't really care that much about the January 6th committee. And another couple more points I'd like to make real quick is this pales in comparison to the problems that are going on right now between inflation, fuel prices, you name it. There's a 100 different things that are, in my opinion, way more important than this. And my last point is that people who think this was an actual coup attempt or to overthrow our democracy and our government, that's ridiculous. It could have never happened.
Oh, why not, Bill? If Vice President Pence had listened to the president and the crowd and said, I'm going to choose not to honor these electoral votes.
Okay. For the first part, for one, there wasn't enough people. They weren't armed to the teeth. I don't think anybody had weapons. If they did, maybe only one or two. Otherwise, I'm not really hearing about it. And three, we have three branches of government. They were just going into the Capitol building. Nobody went to the White House. Nobody went to the Justice Department or the Supreme Court to try to overthrow that. Somebody just tried overthrowing the Supreme Court by trying to kill Justice Kavanaugh the other day.
And Bill, thanks for the call referring to the person who turned himself in with a weapon. But this effort to persuade Congress and the vice president to not honor the election, David, what do you think of what our caller had to say?
Well, first off, again, I still say he's sort of downplaying it by saying, well, it was just a few people, just maybe not too many people armed. I'm sort of paraphrasing it. And it was only the Capitol. Well, the fact is, it still was the Capitol. It still was a mob. And people died. I mean, this was a violent act that took place at our seat of government in the United States. And that's pretty dangerous. It's not about saying that, well, they tried to take over the government. They tried to engineer a coup and fail, and therefore we shouldn't worry about it. The fact that they tried to do so, the fact that this is what I think is being argued here, the fact that either they or they at the behest of the president orchestrated a takeover of the Capitol that tried to stop the peaceful transition of a democracy from occurring. That is the danger in and of itself. That's the problem. Now, I do agree with the caller, and I made my same point here, is to say that if there's a question here of how much the American public is paying attention, and this is the whole purpose of what happened last night in these hearings, is to tell the American public, guess what? This is serious. This is perhaps way more serious than what happened with Watergate 50 years ago, where that's about a robbery, you know, a break-in, you know, at the Democratic headquarters. This is about what? Trying to either convince a vice president to overturn an election when he has no authority to do so, or basically what? If the vice president won't do it, we're going to what? Hang the vice president. That's pretty serious stuff that's going on out there. And I don't think we should downplay the fact that because what? They weren't successful doesn't mean it wasn't important.
Bill, thanks for the call. We're talking about last night's January 6th Commission public hearing with David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, professor of law at the University of Minnesota. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on these committee hearings? Are you following them? Did you watch directly or read up or watch up on it this morning? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with political science and law professor David Schultz with us today to talk about revelations from the first day of public hearings put on by the January 6th Commission. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Briefly, before we go back to our callers, David, part of the story here was what President Trump actually knew about his claims about election fraud, multiple instances, including testimony from William Barr, former attorney general, a lot of people in the president's circle saying at the time they knew there wasn't fraud and they were telling the president there hadn't been significant fraud.
No, it's very important on a couple of reasons. You know, one of them is just to establish the fact that that he was informed, as you pointed out here, that he went to court over 60 times, could never marshal the evidence to prove that there was fraud, and was repeatedly told that. And why that becomes important is that if you think about, again, the analogy I made earlier, that this sounded like the beginning of an opening statement for a criminal trial. One of the things that could come out of this is a referral from Congress over to the Justice Department to prosecute the former president. And one of the possible violations would be interference with a governmental function, a governmental meeting. And like any criminal law, you have to prove intent. And part of what has to be shown here and what they're trying to lay out is to say that the president knew, he knew that the election was not stolen. And therefore sought to interfere with the performance of a governmental function, that is specifically the counting, or rather, I'd say the certifying of the electoral votes. So there is a purpose here. There's a purpose here that perhaps might be just for historians, maybe for just posterity to say the president knew but disregarded that and therefore was important in engineering a lot of things. But it could also potentially be important in prosecution of the president.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. John is with us in Sauk City. John, hi.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to make a comment on there was a previous caller that sort of implied that the January 6th attack wasn't important. And then he went on to talk about the Supreme Court justice that was threatened. And it just fascinates me how people's opinions are skewed by whatever they're listening to. I'm sure he had good intentions, but he's made such different judgments about two similar things. And I find that fascinating. And I wonder how we're going to get around that.
John, thanks for the call. And David, people are literally seeing two different news feeds last night. Fox News not running the hearings, not airing commercials, not breaking away to commercials. Having the hearings on in the background, cutting away when at moments when windows are broken and things like that. People are really seeing this from two very different vantage points.
No, you're absolutely correct. And January 6th just becomes yet another event, let us say, such as the pandemic, such as mask wearing, as so many other things, where we have an enormous partisan divide and polarization in America. And we've talked, I think maybe even on this show before, we've talked about, you know, we live in such different worlds. We have different factual realities at this point. And I am also fascinated by that fact with Fox National choosing not to even show it, not to even talk about it, and really sort of creating, you know, again, two different worlds. And if we're talking about trying to create some type of bridge to overcome the polarization, I don't see it happening in the near future. And I know some people have said, well, we shouldn't even be showing these hearings. We shouldn't even have these hearings. It just stokes the fire of division. I don't think you can stoke it any more than it is. And again, at some point, I think part of these hearings is the purpose of what? Letting the American public see. Let them actually see the videos, hear people speak, and in part render their own judgment. And when Fox decided not to do that, from my opinion, and I've written about sort of like the media in the past, is that I think they were kind of derelict in their duty in not providing the critical information that they're expected to do as a press or a media source in terms of informing their viewers.
Thanks for that call. One thing I want to get to before we run out of time, David, is looking ahead to future presidential elections. I know Congress has some things in the works to clarify the Electoral Count Act to make it very clear that, for example, the vice president doesn't have unilateral authority to accept or reject a state's electoral college, you know, their approved electors.
Sure.
What are you looking for when it comes to actual tweaks, fixes in the law to take away some of the risks?
Well, first off, even without the act, the Constitution is pretty clear that the states have pretty broad authority in terms of determining how they're going to allocate their electoral votes, and that the Electoral Count Act is really, it's not even certifying. It's really kind of just counting just to make sure. You know, there was never anything in that act that really said Congress could second guess and what the states did. So if you're going to do any kind of tweaking whatsoever, I think you kind of hinted at it, maybe state explicitly that Congress and the vice president don't have the authority to be able to unilaterally reject votes, and maybe lay out criteria regarding better how states go about putting together their electoral votes, how Congress reviews them and things like that for whatever perfunctory review there is. So I think it's really more tweaking than anything else at this point in terms of what the act needs to do. But I want to get one other thing in here, though, which I think is very important, is that one of the things that many people are forgetting in this situation here, and you hinted at it before, is that Mike Pence should be given a lot of congratulations. He was under enormous pressure from the president of the United States. And when push come to shove, he did the right thing. He said, I don't have the authority to do this. And that's important. But also, we shouldn't have sort of the threads of democracy hanging by simply the acts of one person like that. But he should nonetheless be commended for what he did in terms of resisting the pressures from the president and perhaps a mob.
David, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, professor of law at the University of Minnesota. He's with us today to look at the first day of public hearings from the January 6th committee, what impact their findings could have. We'll bring you live coverage of Monday's hearing, by the way, with analysis from NPR. You can start that at here on the Ideas Network. That'll be Monday morning at 9, and then Monday here on Central Time. We'll get an update on those House committee hearings on the January 6th assault. Plus, religion could have a big impact on American politics, sometimes in surprising and unexpected ways. We'll meet the author of the new book, 20 Myths About Religion and Politics in America. That and more coming up Monday here on Central Time.